Lewis Slotin was tickling the dragon in a laboratory at Los Alamos, carefully lowering a beryllium shell over the plutonium core of a Mark III implosion bomb. The beryllium served as a tamper. It reflected neutrons, increased the number of fissions, and brought the assembly closer to a chain reaction. The clicks of a Geiger counter gave an audible measure of how fast the fissions were multiplying. Slotin knew what he was doing. He'd assembled the core for the Trinity test and performed dozens of criticality experiments like this one. A co-worker had asked to see how it was done, and on the spur of the moment, Slotin decided to show him. The core looked like an enormous gray pearl resting inside a shiny beryllium shell. Slotin used a screwdriver to lower the top half of that shell. And then, at about 3:20 in the afternoon on May 21, 1946, the screwdriver slipped, the shell shut, the core went supercritical, and a blue flash filled the room. Slotin immediately threw the top half of the tamper onto the floor, halting the chain reaction. But it was too late. He'd absorbed a lethal dose of radiation. And he, more than anyone else in the room, knew it. Within hours, Slotin was vomiting. His hands were turning red and swollen, his fingernails blue. General Groves flew Slotin's parents down from Winnipeg on a military plane to say goodbye. A week later, Slotin was gone, and his death was excruciating, like so many tens of thousands at Hiroshima and Nagasaki had been. It was recorded on film, with his consent, as a sobering lesson on the importance of nuclear safety. Three of the other seven men in the lab that day eventually died of radiation-induced illnesses. But Slotin had added years to their lives by thinking quickly and stopping the chain reaction. In the absence of any fast-acting safety mechanism at the laboratory, a report on the accident later concluded, Slotin was that safety device. The same plutonium core that took Slotin's life had already killed one of his assistants, Harry Daglian. A small tungsten brick had slipped from Daglian's hand while he, alone in the laboratory at night, was performing an experiment the previous August. The brick landed near the core, which became supercritical for a moment, and Daglian was dead within a month. Having taken the lives of two promising young physicists, it was nicknamed the Demon Core, placed in a Mark III bomb, and detonated during a test at the Bikini Atoll. Slotin's mishap was the fourth criticality accident at Los Alamos within a year, raising concern about the management practices at America's nuclear weapon facilities. The reactors at Hanford were not only dangerous but largely incapable of making plutonium. Most of the famous scientists who'd worked on the Manhattan Project had left government service after the war. The manufacture of atomic bombs didn't seem to be a wise career choice at a time when the world appeared ready to ban them. In April 1947, David Lilienthal visited Los Alamos for the first time after becoming head of the Atomic Energy Commission. He was shocked by what he saw. Rudimentary equipment, dilapidated buildings, poor housing, muddy, unpaved roads, and plutonium cores stored in cages at an old ice house. Lilienthal was a liberal, one of the last New Dealers in the Truman administration, and he'd seen a lot of rural poverty while running the Tennessee Valley Authority during the Great Depression. But that first day at Los Alamos, he later noted, was one of the saddest days of my life. Nuclear weapons were now thought indispensable for the defense of the United States. Lilienthal had expected to find them neatly and safely stored for immediate use. The substantial stockpile of atom bombs we and the top military assumed was there in readiness did not exist, Lilienthal subsequently wrote. Furthermore, the production facilities that might enable us to produce quantities of atomic weapons likewise did not exist. The number of atomic bombs in the American arsenal was considered so secret that it could not be shared with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or even recorded on paper. After visiting Los Alamos, Lilienthal met with President Truman in the Oval Office and told him how many atomic bombs would be available in the event of a war with the Soviet Union. At most, one. The bomb was unassembled, but in Lilienthal's view, probably operable. The president was stunned. He'd just announced the Truman Doctrine before Congress, vowing to contain the worldwide spread of communism. Admirals and generals were fighting over the atomic stockpile, completely unaware that there wasn't one. "We not only didn't have a pile," Lilienthal recalled, "we didn't have a stock." The threat to destroy the Soviet Union, if it invaded Western Europe, was a bluff. During his visit to New Mexico, Lilienthal also discovered a shortage of scientists trained to make atomic bombs. The physicists, chemists, and engineers who'd put together the bombs at the end of the Second World War were now scattered throughout the United States. The Mark III implosion bomb was, in Oppenheimer's words, a haywire contraption, difficult and dangerous to assemble. But at least some of the scientists in Los Alamos still knew how to make one. Nobody had bothered to save all the technical drawings necessary for building another little boy, the uranium-based gun-type bomb dropped on Hiroshima. The exact configuration of the various parts had never been recorded on paper, an oversight that, amid the current shortage of plutonium, created some unease. As files and storerooms at Los Alamos were searched for information about Little Boy's design, a machinist offered to demonstrate how one of the bomb's aluminum tubes had been forged. He'd wrapped the metal around a Coke bottle. After the war, the Z Division at Los Alamos, which had designed the firing and fusing mechanisms of both atomic bombs, was moved an hour and a half south to an old Army air base near Albuquerque. The Z Division's headquarters was soon renamed the Sandia Laboratory, and a new military outfit called the Armed Forces Special Weapons Project, AFSWP, was located at the base, too. When the production of Mark III bombs resumed, the work was now divided among three organizations. Los Alamos fabricated the cores and the explosive lenses. Sandia was responsible for the rest of the weapon, and the AFSWP trained military personnel how to complete the assembly in the field. Norris Bradbury, the director of Los Alamos, pushed for improved designs that would make atomic bombs simpler, smaller, lighter,